Boland and the Mid-Morning Show.
Hi, welcome back. Now, my first guest today, what a fascinating job. As I said, a quote from my guest himself saying, what I do is so uncommon that I'm probably the only person in the world who does it. Well, let's find out. The book is called Seized. It's up on our website. A sea captain's adventure battling scoundrels in Paris while recovering stolen ships in the world's most troubled water. His name is Max Hardberger. What a great name, Hardberger. And that's what he is, a hard man. Max, welcome to the show today.
Good morning.
Thanks for joining us, Max, and it's brilliant to have you on. Max, very interesting, this book. You say you're probably the only person in the world who does it. I think you are the only person who does it.
Well, yes, but it's a quite narrow field. There are people who repossess yachts, but I don't deal with yachts.
You just do you deal with the supertankers and et cetera?
And dry cargo ships, right.
Okay, now, first of all, what I want to explain and I want to understand, I never understand how pirates can board these ships. I've seen these supertankers. They're very high out of the water. They're not, you know, it's not as if there's ladders for them to scale up, and they're moving forward. How do they board these ships without the crew being able to smash their fingers and everything as they try?
Well, unfortunately, the politically correct line has been in the past not to resist, to throw over a Jacob's ladder and let them come up unopposed. Obviously, that's changing, but you have a very good point that a ship is a natural defensive point, and if the ship's crew or if a riding crew of armed men wanted to stop them from coming on board, except for the fact that they have RPGs that can disable the ship's engine room, it could be done.
So how do they? You say now things have changed. Well, look, if you're sort of a crew on a ship and you see all these pirates coming towards you, you're going to have to resist. It's your natural ability was to resist, no?
Well, the problem is that ship's crews are not trained to resist, and they don't have the weaponry they need to resist. And you don't want to, unless you can be successful, you don't want to even start resistance, because that just raises the ante and could cause more problems. So if unless you have men on board who are trained and armed and know what they're doing, it is probably best not to resist.
Is it better and probably less insurance to be paid if you had armed marshals like they do in some airlines? Would it be better to have that? Would you agree with that?
Traditionally, no. The insurance companies didn't like it, but that is changing now.
Okay, so there is a chance that armed marshals will join these ships.
Well, it's already happening.
Okay. Now, I understand that... from what I understand, and maybe you know a bit more about this, Haitian pirates, let's take them for example, among other pirates. From what I understand, when they seize a ship and they look for sums of 5 million and whatever it is in pounds, dollars, whatever they get, seemingly they put that back into the economy in where they come from because they're so poor and broke. Is that true or is it just a myth?
Well, every criminal puts money back into his economy. He has to eat. His family has to eat. That doesn't justify what he does, though. He should find some legal means to feed his family.
Well, sometimes these people are so desperate. Okay, let's talk about your job. And congratulations, Max, on the book, by the way.
Thank you.
A very, very unique book. Seized is the thing. And that sort of sums it up. These boats have been seized or they've been pirated or whatever the case may be. And you have been called on as a last resort, I believe.
That's correct.
Tell me about your job. Give us an example. Let's say, give us a job. Give us a job bag.
All right. A typical situation would be, it always starts with a phone call. A ship owner calls me. His ship's been seized, let's say, in Venezuela, and by a corrupt judicial system, and he can't get it out. So I have to go into the country and conduct my undercover surveillance. I have to get on board the ship, generally with an engineer who can tell me the situation in the engine room. And then I have to evolve a plan after I get on the ground. The plan normally
Can I stop you there? How do you have to get on the ship?
Well, I have to sneak. Sometimes I can pretend to be something else. Like quite often I'll pretend to be a buyer or an inspector of some kind. Sometimes I actually have to sneak on board in the middle of the night to make sure nobody knows I'm on board.
And where do you find these ships? In a bay somewhere? How do you track the ship itself? Is that quite easy?
No, it's not easy. But I have a lot of friends in a lot of ports. So what I first start doing is when I narrow down a geographic range, let's say by knowing the last amount of fuel on board, then I'll call my friends in the various ports, and I've been able to find them.
Quite scientific, the whole tracking bit. So you find the boat, and it's sitting there in the port, and it's just lying there, or not lying there, but sitting there, large tanker. then you have to board that one way or the other, as you explain. Maybe you pretend you're a buyer, or that you sneak on at night. Let's talk about sneaking on at night and how you do that, because I assume these parents are not stupid.
No, and of course, there's always a government guard or some guards on board, and sometimes there are hostile crew on board. But sometimes I've had to go up with grapples off the waterside, take a small boat up at night and come up the waterside. Sometimes, if the ship's not being surveilled from the land, we just come on board from the land side up the gangway.
So you get aboard the ship, have a look and see what the engines are like. I assume, fuel-wise, you said that you look at the fuel and then sort of see where the position might be. What happens if they haven't got enough fuel aboard?
Then I have to have a tugboat come get it, because there's no way of surreptitiously fueling a ship.
Well, one would imagine sneaking a ship that size out with a tugboat pulling it is not the easiest thing in the world.
No, but I've done it.
Well, really? So let's talk through the job back. So you got the call, you've decided to board the ship. Then what happens?
Well, excuse me, once I determine the situation on board and what I need to have, then I bring in, let's say, for example, that I'm going to take a repossession crew and we're going to take her out under her own steam. I'll bring my crew in separately, put them in different hotels with strict orders not to communicate with each other. And then when the time comes, I will gather them, let's say, for example, on a small launch that I've hired, and we'll come on board. Each man will go to his job. The deck crew will cut the dock lines. The chief engineer and his engineers get the engines going. Then we turn around and head for international water.
So are you pursued? Because obviously the town has woken up, or someone's woken up with the movement of a ship that size.
Well, I hope not, but I have been pursued.
And what happens then? Are you armed?
No, never.
So the pirates have no moral issues here. They're I assume, are armed. And you've obviously, I mean, in your book you talk about the dangers. There's obviously great dangers of being killed.
Yeah, that's true.
So in when they're pursuing you, are they opening fire on you? Well, what do they open fire at? A ship that size, I suppose, is not what you fire at.
Well, I usually get, if I'm going to be pursued, I'm going to be pursued by warships, Coast Guard boats, or Navy vessels. Actually, only once have I been pursued. The rest of the time I was able to get out without anybody knowing it, or without the wrong people knowing it. The time I was pursued, I timed the extraction so I'd be able to run into a thunderstorm, a huge thunderstorm, and I knew that the Navy ship's radars wouldn't be able to see through the rain clutter, and I got away with it.
Something I've lost here. These ships have been seized by pirates. This is an illegal operation. What Navy would be after you then?
No. These pirates are much more sophisticated than that. What he does is you have a ship sent to a port where you have a pet judge. Then you pay the judge to seize the ship legally.
Well, that's quite clever, isn't it? Now, one of your first moves, I read also, is trying to get to the judge and trying to get that boat released before you start trying to take the boat.
Sure. He was paid to seize it. He can be paid to unseize it.
So there's a vast amount of money paid out in these. From what we understand, maybe there isn't, but we understand it runs into the millions of dollars in bribes, et cetera, et cetera, and it comes from the shipping companies themselves. Then one would imagine, Max, that you're a very wealthy man.
No, not at all. I'm a wage slave like anybody else.
So you don't say, I'll go in, I'll get your ship back, but I want $1 million to do it.
Oh, no, nothing like that. I would say that we charge our fee based on the difficulty of the job, the expenses, and the value of the vessel. But our fees, the whole cost would run, say, $100,000 to $200,000. But our actual fees, what we put in our pocket, is considerably lower than that.
Have you been called on to find that English couple, their yacht? They sailed into the troubled waters, and they were captured and still being held, from what I understand, still being held prisoner.
Right. The real problem there, and it's a real tragedy, is that they're not being held on board their vessel. They're being held on board on shore in a country where virtually no outsider can go in with any assurance of getting out. So they're in a very bad situation.
And, you know, one would have imagined, you know, they were looking for millions of dollars. This yacht was privately owned. They have no money. One would imagine that the government might stake a few bob and try to get them out, but that hasn't happened.
I'm a small boat sailor myself, and it breaks my heart to see this.
Yeah, and they're not what you'd call a young couple, and not strong at all. So it's not looking very good for them, is it?
No, and I've read some reports that the husband is sick, and he and his wife have been separated, which you can imagine the stress that that's caused.
And exactly, and how frightened the two of them must be.
Absolutely.
Now you've taken ships back from the Caribbean. You've taken them back from Russian mobsters. Now, okay, Caribbean maybe, but Russian mobsters who are possibly much more technically advanced than any Caribbean islander. Was that a more difficult job for you?
Well, it was scary. I had to flee Russia. I didn't get the ships out because the situation was just too dangerous. So I and my associate had to flee Russia.
Tell us a little bit about that Russian ship, because one would imagine that they had no cooperation from judges on that one.
No, it was a completely different matter. What had happened was we went over there to buy some scrap ships for a Chinese buyer. When I got there, I found that the Russian mafia had taken control of these scrap ships and, in fact, had killed a man in the office that had owned them that we were negotiating with. When we realized that we would have to deal, and then the Russian mafia came and spirited us out of the hotel and pretty much threatened me that if I didn't have my client come there with cash, then I would be in trouble. So that's when I decided to leave town.
What's the I don't know if you still are a qualified airline pilot as well.
No, never airline. I'm a small plane pilot.
And you still fly planes into these areas?
No, I not much. I mean, I still fly, but I generally just fly around locally.
Okay. Now, how busy are you?
I'm pretty busy.
There's still, I mean, this high profile of ships being seized seems to have got down to page 10 in the newspapers now, if in the newspapers at all. Has it eased back since the recession?
No, in fact, in terms of repossessions, the decline in the shipping industry has caused owners not to be able to pay their bills, which causes an increase in repossessions.
Okay, now let me just say, one of the critics has written here about your book. It says, required reading, fascinating, maritime repo man, Hardberger. Did I pronounce your name right? Hardberger, is it?
Right, that's correct.
Good, great name, Hardberger. Does it tough. His life is flown by the seat of his pants or shipped, much like his profession. This book delivers. It sounds, you know, the making of a movie here. I feel there's something like a movie. Any talk on that?
Oh, yeah, that's quite advanced. Right now, Mosaic Media is looking at producing it. But, of course, movies take a long time to make. It'll be at least 3 years down the road.
So have they taken an option on the book?
Oh, they haven't taken the option yet.
I hope they do. You've got a website. Now, tell us a little bit about the website, www.maxhardberger.com. Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, it's the website pretty much lays out the various things I do. I do a number of different things just to stay afloat, and the website just lays them out.
Well, you're a journalist, aren't you, as well?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
English and history teacher.
Right.
Crop duster.
Ex-crop duster.
Oh, ex, okay. Private investigator.
Ex-private investigator.
Maritime lawyer.
Still currently a maritime lawyer.
Flight instructor.
I'm still licensed, but I don't do much of it.
Ship surveyor.
Still do that.
Commercial aircraft pilot, says here, but you said you're not a commercial aircraft pilot.
No, I'm commercial, but not airline.
Okay, sorry, yeah. Sailing instructor.
I still sail, I don't instruct anymore.
Insurance adjuster.
I've given that up.
Vessel repossession specialist, we know that. Filmmaker.
I have done that in the past.
Oil field, I love this one. If there was a program on called What's My Line, no one would ever guess your line on this one here. Oil field mud engineer.
That's right, I did that for about 10 years.
Could you cap that BP, do you think?
No, no one can do that.
You don't think it's going to happen?
Not until the relief well is finished.
Stuntman.
Yeah, I still do that.
Ship breaker.
When I have ships to break, I have a place in Haiti where I break them, but I don't have a ship there now.
So are you based in Haiti?
About half the time.
Yeah, we did a beautiful record called "The Prayer" in aid of the victims of the earthquake, which is still on I think it's up on YouTube. You can have a look at it, and it's beautiful.
I will definitely look at that.
And we raised a considerable amount of money as soon as that happened.
How is all of us in Haiti are certainly appreciative.
Yeah, we had the Haitian Christian radio station, I can't remember the name of it, on the show here with me talking about the tragedy. And I think that we haven't, the problem with these tragedies, and is like the tsunami, it's out of our minds now, and it shouldn't be, because it's the rainy season there, I believe, and I believe that there's just not enough shelter for the poor victims.
Well, you know, that's a little bit of a misconception. Haiti has a dry season and a drier season.
Okay.
So Haiti is pretty much a desert, which people find kind of surprising. The big problem in Haiti is not the rain, but the sun. The children and the infirm, they're dying like flies right now. I just came back from Haiti, and nothing has really been changed. And what is happening now is the heat and the lack of nutrition that's killing people.
Well, we work with the Ark Christian Fellowship, and the reason we chose to work with them is they have no administration charges, and they have people out there for the last 8 years working with the orphanages. So that's why we chose that. We felt our money would go direct to the orphanages rather than, you know, have administration charges involved in it. So we were delighted to do that, and I think that, you know, the problem is that, and I've accused people of doing this, and I'm now guilty myself of not continuing to tell people that Haiti disaster is not over. It's far from over.
No, the people who died are dead. The survivors are the ones who are the victims now.
Is it a very different Haiti to the Haiti you remembered before the earthquake?
No, what is really sad is that very little has changed.
Is it still as corrupt as it always was?
Only it's less corrupt in the sense that there's no government now.
Oh, so the government was the leading in the as the.
Oh, of course.
Well, look, so where was I? Yes, you're a drummer in a blues band.
Yeah, I still do that. I have a job this weekend.
Oh, I was a drummer, but many years
ago. Oh, you were? Great.
Many years ago. The Good Powers, a Hollywood film inspired by your adventures, is currently under development. Well, that's it. They're going to call it The Good Powers.
Well, a working title, right.
Okay. My God, you're a busy man. Absolutely brilliant to have you on the show. And when you get up in the morning, you have many hats to put on, different jobs to do, but it's always exciting, I'm sure.
I like the less exciting ones.
Do you? You don't like going out to rescue ships?
No, I don't mind it, but I'm not a thrill seeker.
Are you not?
God, no.
You're certainly a risk taker.
Well, in the course of the job, you have to be willing to do the job.
Okay. Well, look, thanks for joining us on the show. As I said, the book is called Seized. Very clever cover on it as well. It's, as I say, it's up there now. You can be ordered off the website. Congratulations, Max, on the book, and thanks for joining us today.
Thank you so much.
Thanks. Bye-bye. What a charming gentleman he is. And I thought he was going to be a real tough talker, but he's a real sweet man.